Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is Kerrigan Byrne. Kerrigan writes historical romance with a touch of dark themes. In this episode, we chat about her latest two series, her writing process, and some book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Kerrigan. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Let's see, a little bit about me. I live in the rain shadow of the Olympic Peninsula up in Washington, right by the coast, and I have a bunch of dogs, and I write historical romance, and I live a pretty boring life, and I know that now because we're all quarantined, and that is not a big difference from my regular everyday existence, except for now I wear a mask when I go grocery shopping. So, I see my friends a little less, yeah. But I just, I'm pretty hurdy. I write a lot. I love playing video games. I love hiking. I do a lot of stuff alone. So, yeah.
I feel you. Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, for quarantine life, like, for me, it's changed some stuff. But for the most part, it's been like, I don't know, I've been in my lonely world, you know, like doing my thing. Like, and now I work remotely, so I don't even have to get out of the house. So I think it's just like, it's an introvert's dream for me, like this whole quarantine stuff. There's stuff that gets a fatigue, but for the most part, it's not that bad.
Where are you from? Where do you live?
So I'm originally from Puerto Rico, but I lived in New York for 14 years until 2 weeks prior to COVID hitting. So I just moved to Chicago. I plan to move to Chicago. So I moved in March 1st, and then COVID hit March 13th. So basically, I'm in a new city where I don't know anyone. So my in real life connections have been with essential workers, but it's totally fine. I've been staying connected. So my work in New York City hired me back. So now I'm working for the company, but I work remotely. So I work from Chicago. So.
Wow. That is crazy. That would be really hard.
It is. It's been fine. Like overall, like I'm in a bigger space right now than I was in New York, so I'm grateful that I was not in New York while COVID was happening, and I'm grateful, like, I'm in a bigger space, and I have, you know, have a living room, and I have a bedroom, and so there's pluses with that. I think it's interesting to be in a new city and feel strange. Like, I don't know anyone. Like, I know my neighborhood, but I haven't looked at Chicago. Like, the jury's still out for Chicago if I want to stay or if I want to leave, but I think right now I'm just kind of like, it's just been, I got to know my apartment. I did a good job of picking that place. So
you had plenty of time to unpack because what was there else to do?
It's been okay. So awesome. So what inspired you to become a writer?
I think just how much I used to read. I learned how to read really early, and it's really been the only thing I was good at, you know, like I have a diary from way back when I was a kid, and it says, you know, I'm going to be a writer. Like, I just can't remember a time in my whole life that I didn't, this isn't what I wanted to do. Like, I've been just writing stories. So I couldn't tell you when the seminal moment is, because I can't remember ever not wanting to do it.
I love it. And were you always a romance reader, or are you a reader of other genres?
I read and have read a lot of mystery. And so I used to read, it was kind of a weird, slow journey into romance, because I read a lot of like R.L. Stine and all of Nancy Drew mysteries, and like just a lot of kind of mystery, and I liked horror. And then I started reading Anne Rice in junior high, and I loved that. And so my friend said, okay, well, if you like vampires, you should try, I think it was Sherilyn Kenyon. Mm-hmm. And they're like, so it's like paranormal romance. And I did read Victoria Holt, who's kind of, you know, old school historical romance. And I always loved that sort of sweeping gothic feel. So, and then I tore through the Dark Hunter series really fast. And then I picked up anything I possibly could, you know, I was hooked from there, because I'm like, you can get all of the best stuff of literature and this great romance and sexy times, like sign me up. So
I love it. So what was your journey to get that first book published?
Let me think. I started going to RWA meetings because I had started writing and I knew that I was not good at it. Mm-hmm. So I went to a couple of conferences. I met critique partners who introduced me to my agent. And while I was shopping to New York, I put up a couple of novellas, mm-hmm. About 8 or 9, up on Amazon, just kind of self-published. And then The Highwayman sold in 2014. And my agent always tells me I owe her big for the hangover she had, because she said, I sold that because I went to drink with your editor, and like, she doesn't drink ever. So it's like 2 drinks makes her so drunk. So she's like, I had a hangover the next day, but we got you a contract. So woohoo. So that was the beginning of that. And then, I've been with the same editor now for 5 years.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your writing. Do you follow an outline, or do you see where the story leads you?
I'm definitely a pantser. I usually start out with characters or a scene that I'm either wanting to start with or get to. So I'll be like, let's say in this like latest book, A Dark and Stormy Night, that I wrote that came out in June. I just knew I wanted to write this one scene in this garden. And I'm like, so I need to build a plot off of that scene and this character who's been in a bunch of the books, Carlton Morley. So most of the time I have some partners that I brainstorm with, like my same critique partners. And so I usually get up in the morning and kind of chit chat about maybe where the day's going to take me. But I often don't know what a book's going to do until my fingers are on the keys and it's happening. So I'll surprise myself a lot, like, oh, okay, well, this is happening now, I guess. Mm-hmm. So no process at all. I am the worst. I could never teach anybody else to write, because I would be like, I don't know. Sit down and give it a go, I guess.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I think every person has their own process. And so if it works for you, just keep doing it. You know, don't try to fix it or try to emulate somebody else's process. It may not work for you.
Exactly. And I tried to be more organized. I've tried to be better at planning, and every time I do, I fall apart, because again it'll take me somewhere else, and then the rest of the plan doesn't work, and I feel like I wasted all of that time. So I keep it vague.
So I got a question, because you're written series, how do you organize yourself, you know, keep track of the characters, the series, like all the different details within the series, as your pantser?
Very badly.
Okay.
Like, a lot of it is in my mind. Since I created the people, I feel like I remember them really well. So it's not like I'm going to forget their names or exactly what happened to them. Mm-hmm. But there are many times when I have to go back to manuscripts, and because I'm in the middle of another book, and I have to go 4 books back and be like, okay, what time did that happen, or how old were they, or what, you know, what, when was this? Or, and so I really should make a Bible, and I've learned my lesson. So I'm like, okay, if I ever do a series that lasts this long again, I'll be more organized. But with the Victorian Rebels, I really didn't. I really didn't, and I should have. So
Yeah. It's okay. So did you get like feedback from like maybe like copy editors or, you know, on your editor, maybe like, oh, hold on, this happened in this book. You may get some feedback that way that, you know, maybe this is, doesn't match the storyline.
No, I'm pretty good at keeping it all straight in my head.
Okay.
I'm not perfect, but I'm pretty good at it. And the only thing I did get called on is I set up in book 4 for the character in book 7 to kind of fall for this other person. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work out that that was the heroine. I just went in a different direction. So I did get a couple of emails that were like, but what about this lady over here? Like, didn't, you know, wasn't he kind of flirting with her? Wasn't he thinking about her? And I'm like, yep, but that didn't, you know, that didn't pan out, I guess, because we went with this whole new other person, but I did that on purpose.
Okay.
Mostly.
That's awesome. So let's talk about historical romance. What is the process like to write them? What kind of research do you conduct? Like, how do you go about creating this world that happened 100 years ago?
I like research for me is actually my favorite part of the process. So I do a lot of just like Googling. I do subscribe to a library, a historical resource at Trinity College, because they have a lot of like things stored, information stored about how people lived, you know, in different times, and like little things that I have to look up, like where's the bathroom located, or how many, you know, how are things heated, because like technology changes so much between every decade, especially in the 19th century. So I'll do that, but a lot of it's just like random Googling, and I find a lot of like Wikipedia articles and then go to their works cited and, you know, read those, or like blogs. So there's a lot of blogs that people are really interested in different times or about different events. And so I can lose myself really. Like sometimes I'll be like, oh, maybe I'll be done today, you know, by 1 or 2 if I start early enough. And then I do 3 hours of like random reading about stuff, and then it takes me all day. So I have to be careful. But yeah, it's usually just like, thank God for Google, because I can't believe sometimes that people used to have to go to the library, like look stuff up, because I would be dead.
Yeah, I can imagine. It would be like, why? So following questions come from the romance community on Instagram. Thank you to Dad, Romance Book Junkie, Michelle Macy Reeds, and Amanda Skating a Book. So let's start with their question. Is it difficult to balance a respect of historic accuracy with modern preferences of the reader?
You know, I run into this a lot. I would say it's the most difficult thing. Because especially as like a lot of the movements that have gone through that we're in the middle of right now, which I'm just so appreciative of, and I, you know, so supportive of, but I feel like sometimes it makes it a little bit more difficult for modern readers to understand maybe the ideas and like the preferences of historical, like it's still because it, like modern sensibilities still don't change the facts of the past, right? So I struggle sometimes to make sure that my heroes, especially since I do write them dark and that kind of thing, are so kind of woke enough to be still heroic to the modern woman, mm-hmm. while keeping them kind of historically accurate and alpha enough to have been a man of the 19th century. So sometimes I run into some moral conundrums there. So I have to be careful.
It's fascinating. So your books tend to be dark for the world of historical romance. Is that what your writing style gravitates towards? Or was it a conscious decision to set the spheres apart in a genre that's typically on the lighter side?
It's natural. It's what my writing gravitates toward. I really, I read mystery and horror, and gothic historicals first. That's always been my love. And so it's a little bit more, and I'm not very funny. Like, I can have moments where I'm like, oh, haha, that was a witty thing I said. That never happened, you know? But, like, I wish I could write lighter. Like, I'll pick up a Tessa Dare book, and I will giggle my way through it, and really have a sense of, like, what do they call it? Jealousy? What do they call it? Like, occupational jealousy or whatever, that I wish I had that kind of, like, quick, snappy wit in my mind, and that kind of adorable, hysterical, yeah, wit is really the only word I can think of. And so, but it's just not there. But I do read a lot about murder, so like that usually ends up in a somewhere. But yeah, it's not intentional marketing wise. It's just what, if I'm going to write anything, you know, that's what I'm going to write. I'm going to write about blood and gore and the dark realities of life, because that's kind of what I'm interested in. So
I love it. I think maybe just go back to your roots, or I'll assign, you know, the books that you read growing up. So maybe just like setting it up in a historical setting. It's just part of it. So which book was the hardest to write?
Let's see. I would say probably The Duke with the Dragon Tattoo was the hardest for me to write. And that's only because, like, I kept getting interrupted by medical emergencies in my family. Like, my husband had this, 2-foot-long blood clot in his leg that he had to get surgery on. And then my daughter had surgery, and my other daughter went to the hospital for 2 weeks. And, like, everybody was, it was crazy. So I was just, there was just a lot going on during that time. So it's actually late turning the book in, and I kept getting, kind of interrupted and trying to write while I'm worried about everything. And so I'm surprised that book did as well as it did, or that it even got finished, because that was just like the hardest year of my life, but it was the most rewarding book that I've ever written. It's still probably one of my favorites, the way it turned out. So
awesome. So let's talk about the Victoria Rebel series. What type of research was involved when writing about Newgate?
I bought a book on it. I can't remember what it's called at the moment, and it's in a box somewhere. But I used to work at a jail in the medical department for about 5 years. And I was just like their office manager. And I thought it was kind of fascinating, the dynamics of how people are when they're locked up, and the things that they do, how, what it does to them psychologically, you know, how similar sometimes the, in my opinion, and this could be maybe a little bit controversial or whatever, but there were often times when I didn't see a lot of difference between the actions and the inner moral compass of the prisoners and the detainers, you know. Like, I respected and liked a lot of the men that I worked with, but sometimes I didn't either, and I didn't agree with the laws that they had to uphold, or sometimes the way that they went around, you know, that they went about it. So but I also really enjoyed working in a male dominated field, because I think men are interesting, you know, their dynamics and that kind of thing. So that's, I think, why I wanted to write so much about Newgate, because it was a little bit more of a free-for-all back then. You know, people had absolute power, like cops and prisoners had no rights whatsoever. And so I thought, like, man, if this is difficult to be a part of today, imagine what it was then. You know, so pretty much a lot of it's real life experience plus trying to plug in the facts of what happened 150 years ago or whatever. So
fascinating. So what made you decide to keep going with the Victoria Rebel series after the original six came with the publisher came to an eye?
Mostly emails from fans and being contacted about, you know, saying Carlton has to have a story, Sebastian and Veronica have to have a story. Like, I always planned on doing a couple of more books. And I talked with my editor, and she kind of always talked about, like, you know, there would probably be another little bit. And so I set those stories up to be written. And then when they decided to go in a different direction and wanted to start a new series, I felt really bad leaving my characters in a place where they didn't get their happily ever after, especially when so many people were emailing me about, like, but what about these guys? What else? You know, like, what are you doing starting mm-hmm. a new series? We've got to finish. It's not finished. Like, mm-hmm. so that was pretty much most of it. It's just, I felt like I owed it to the characters, and even more, I owed it to the people who were asking for the stories. So.
I love it. Who are your influences for Victoria Rebel series, if there were any?
Like, specifically character-wise, I could say a lot of people, but I always say, like, this is my this story, or this is my that story. Like, Dorian, like, The Highwayman would be my Count of Monte Cristo story, kind of. It's one of my mm-hmm. favorite books of all time. And I was really into Dexter when I was writing The Hunter, and I liked the idea of an assassin. And his heroine, Millie, I looked a lot into, like, Sarah Bernhardt and some of the, like, big grand dames of the theater at the time. So there's a lot of things and people and books and tropes and everything that sort of influence my stories. But I couldn't say for the entire series that there was one influence.
So you self-published a book. What was some of the most surprising thing you learned from self-publishing your big book 7 of the Return Rebel series?
Surprising things. I feel like the most surprising thing is like sort of having the freedom to take a story in any direction you want. Mm-hmm. There's a freedom that comes with that's really exciting. And then there's also kind of some anxiety that comes with that, because you're like, what if I break some rule and everybody decides this is the worst thing I've ever done, you know? So it's, I wouldn't say I was surprised super much, but, I think that's mostly it. It's just, not having anybody before it comes out really, who is an industry professional, tell you yes or no, this is marketable or this isn't marketable. You kind of have to trust yourself on that mm-hmm. score. So I would say that's the most.
Yeah, I can imagine there's quite a lot of freedom just basically, you know, putting the work out there, like not having to be accountable to, you have a deadline, so you said yourself, but it's not industry-led deadlines of getting mm-hmm. the work done, you know.
Right.
So, awesome. So, starting with the Devil You Know series. Each book mm-hmm. we follow the Red Rose, a group of friends who have each other's back and will support each other to the end. What was an important showcase of unconditional love within the friendship?
I think it's because I've always had those fierce female friendships where it's sort of like, you know, I'll bury a body for you, you know, and mm-hmm. you say that, you know, like to your friends, like, I will come and hide the bodies. I love you that much, kind of thing. And so I kind of thought, like, well, what if they actually had to? Like, what if that was a secret they actually had to do? Like, they did bury the body together, kind of thing. And so I think that those kind of relationships are just as powerful as the relationships you have with the partner in your life, or the man or woman or other that you love, you know. And so I wanted that to be something where, you know, the women are in competition, there's not an ex that's a villain, there's, you know, that they're not vilifying other women, they're very close, and they could be each other's support whether they had love in their life or not. So it wasn't a man that completed them, because they already completed each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love the friendships. Like, I just love the fact that they were, like, so, they had each other's back. Like, it was just, like, a sense, like, they traveled the world, they grew their life, and they were, like, able to support each other to the end. Like, there was no question about it. And it was, like,
it was just, like,
you're ride or die, you know?
Yeah. So, well, my editor keeps telling me, too, like, this is a fantasy story that you're writing. Like, this is all about fantasy, and like one of the fantasies that I like to fulfill, or that's like a fantasy or reality for me, is that kind of like not just having a ride or die guy, but also having, you know, that whole support system, that whole tribe, like people who will be with you through everything, you know.
Yeah. And they both, you know, the characters we met Alexandra, we met Cecilia, we met Francesca, they all have like a life full before they fall in love. Like they were able to, you know, go to school or just have businesses or do something, mm-hmm. like, and they support each other in that process, that it wasn't just like they're in the marriage march looking for a husband. Like they
That was important to me. Yeah. Their life could have been completely full and happy whether they found a man or not. I thought that was really important for me to write that.
So this was really cool. Alexandra went through a major trauma on page that affected her relationship and what she wants in life. What was it important to showcase her healing process in this book?
I think I read a lot of books that deal with this subject and kind of the objectification, or like the turning them into victims or damsels if you have been a victim of sexual assault. And so I thought, you know, I know a lot of people, and as a survivor myself, that it might be interesting to show a way of being that is other than that, that like you don't need necessarily, again, like you don't need a man to heal you or to show you healing or to like fix any of that. Like they definitely, the right one can help and the right one can fit into your life, but like that she made herself a whole person, mm-hmm. and an entire being with an entire full life, and found some happiness and still had to deal with her trauma and still had to work around it and learn how to function like we all do, mm-hmm. but she was able to do it, and because she was able to do it, she was whole enough to fall in love also, and with the right man who did the right things and treated her the right way, mm-hmm. most of the time, not all the time. He had some stuff that he had some stuff he had to fix.
Yeah, he had some rough edges, but I think it worked. Like it was just like it worked. I think the whole relationship, how it grew, like it made sense. Like I think it was just perfection. Talk about Cecilia. She inherits a gambling hall in a school for ladies that has a lot of secrets. Her hero's trying to catch her. Why is there this conflict in the story? Like they were pretty much at odds, and yet they were attracted to each other.
Mm-hmm. I really like it when people change their minds about something that they'd had preconceived notions. You know, like this is kind of like, I wouldn't say my Pride and Prejudice because it doesn't have anything to do with Pride and Prejudice, but it kind of had that, like, where both people were definitely in the right and trying to do the right thing and had the right intentions. You know, she wanted to allow these women to make a living how they wanted to make a living, and she mm-hmm. Wanted to carry on her family dynamic and keep a business open, and he was worried about women being objectified and breaking the law and, you know, being used the way they shouldn't be. And so I think I wanted to show that, like, sometimes you can approach things from a different perspective, and it doesn't mean that either perspective is wrong, but or maybe both perspectives are wrong until you learn to understand each other, mm-hmm. and try and like learn to work together, you know? So I really like that sort of opposites attract trope too. And so this is one of the first times that I really got to delve into that. And I was happy with how it turned out. So
you did. It turned out really well. So how difficult was it to write Phoebe?
Not difficult at all. I have daughters, and they're stepdaughters. So they were 2, 4, and 6 when I met them. They were 4, 6, and 8 when we got married, and now they're all in their early 20s. And so writing about Phoebe, or about kids that maybe it didn't start out as yours, but you really come to love and fall in love with, that's really easy for me to mine that kind of emotion and data. So I do that all the time. You know, I tend to write that a little bit more sometimes than even mothers of their own kids. And I didn't realize that I did that until I went back and looked over all of the books that I have. And I'm like, you know, most of the kids I write about are not born to the woman who ends up raising them. And that was not on purpose, but I guess it comes out of me sometimes. So
I love this. What can we expect from Francesca's book?
Let's see, without any spoilers, it will be a second chance romance. And definitely secrets, because like this isn't a spoiler really, but like Francesca was not born Francesca, right? So she was born somebody else, and so she and the hero of the story have a past, but it's not her past, it's a past of someone she's pretending to be. So there will be a lot, yeah. There'll be a lot of explosive chemistry, but there's also, you know, secrets and revenge and lots of passion. So I think it's actually, of all three of the books, it was my favorite to write. So I'm hoping people will enjoy it.
I can't wait. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. It's an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
I would say mystery is my favorite genre, which is hard to tie down because it's in everything. I love mystery romance. I love mystery thriller. I love like those dark psychological mysteries that everybody's putting out right now. Like, if you can just keep me glued to the page trying to figure out who did something or what's about to happen, like, I'm here for it. So
who are your favorite authors?
So many. I would say for romance, Karen Marie Monning and Lisa Kleypas are at my very top. So Karen Marie Monning does a lot of like paranormal. And that's kind of was my first love when I was reading romance. And so I love her, like I'm very Irish and Scottish and Welsh. And so I love all of her Celtic druids, you know, like I just go nuts about that kind of stuff. So, and then Lisa Kleypas just writes historicals so lush and so perfectly. And she's just kind of the queen of get like the best character study. You know, like there have been books that I've read of hers that I'm like, this is not a meaty plot. Like there's not a ton going on here, but there's so much inside of these characters that I can't not read about them. Mm-hmm. And that's like a very specific talent, I think, that I'm envious of a little bit. And then I would also say Christopher Moore is my favorite author, and he writes kind of comedy. He writes he has a lot of romance in his stories too, but he writes like my favorite book of his is, well, it's two books, it's A Dirty Job and Secondhand Souls. Mm-hmm. And it's about this guy who becomes death, or like a reaper.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, he owns a thrift store and he's a widower and he has a kid, like a toddler, and she's accidentally the Antichrist, and it's just hysterical. And he falls in love with a nun. Like, it's just so funny, and you're giggling through the whole thing. So he does, like, everything he writes is good. I've never read a book of his that I didn't absolutely love. So
I love it. What has been a book you read this past year or last year that you love?
Oh, so many. Let's see. I read Private Lies by Cynthia St. Aubin. It was really fantastic. And she also has a book out. She has one that's like love. Let's see, it's like Love Bites, which is sort of a, like, I don't know if you've ever read Mary Janice Davidson, but it's sort of like a paranormal comedy.
Yeah.
So there's like Love Bites, Love Sucks, and Love Lies, I believe, are the all three. And it's kind of about this woman who gets a job at an art gallery, but she doesn't realize that it's run by a pack of werewolves. And it is, I giggle through the whole thing, but it is really hot and really good. So
That looks so good.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Tell us where you can find you online.
I'm pretty much everywhere. I'm not on Twitter very often because, like, everybody's so mad. Like, I don't check it very much. But I'm on Instagram just at Kerrigan Byrne, or Facebook. You can find me, Kerrigan Byrne, also. I have a website, kerriganbyrne.com. Like, luckily, I don't have a name that everybody else has, so I don't have to do a lot of, like, numbers or dashes or anything. Yeah. So you can find me anywhere. Or my email is kerriganbyrne@gmail.com. So
awesome.
Well, I'm always around.
Thank you, Kerrigan, for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. You're so fun to talk to.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyourreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.